Hey Liverpool fans, have you seen the latest release? At Anfield Index, we've teamed up with Liverpool FC to announce that the brand new 24-25 LFC Nike home kit and anthem jacket are out now, and they're hotter than ever. The brand new kit pays homage to the legendary Rome 1984 side, featuring sleek pinstripe detailing that brings a touch of history to our modern game. Whether you're cheering from the cop or watching from home, you'll feel the spirit of the Reds coursing through every stitch. The best part? You can grab yours today. The new kit and training range are available in official stores, online, and through the LFC store app. Don't wait, order now and be ready to show your Liverpool pride and style. Get your hands on the new 24-25 LFC home kit and anthem jacket today. Let's make this season unforgettable. You'll never walk alone.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights.
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hey guys, and welcome to another post-match call-in show. You know what, with all the shenanigans that have been going on this weekend, I almost forgot that Liverpool had a game. But thank you so much for joining us. This show is brought to you in partnership with Liberty Shield, the perfect VPN companion for all your entertainment and privacy needs, where you can get a massive 25% off everything using the code AIVPN. Liberty Shield offers free VPN apps for iOS, Android, Amazon Fire Stick, Mac and Windows. Now, like I said, completely forgot Liverpool had a game, but business is business. A massive game, a massive win against Chelsea as well. 2-0 it finished. And joining me on this podcast, you know, there's a lot of excitement. Also, you know, that boy Thiago, he featured. His song is like an earworm to every Liverpool fan's ears. But joining me on this podcast, I think we've got some callers, but I can't do this by myself, and I've got two incredible guests for you again. So you know what? Without further ado, let me introduce them to you. First up, I'm actually very excited because I have not done a podcast with this guy in a very, very long time. And we used to work together a lot back in the day. So it is an honour and a privilege to have back the host of Rate Don't Hate, Kaylon. Kay, how you doing?
I am absolutely off my head, Nina. I am so excited, both about being on NKS, but I mean, got to see Thiago in a Liverpool shirt today. I can't do anything with myself. I'm actually just like running around my room, bouncing off the fucking walls. But I'm really happy to be potting with you again, Nins. It's been just far too long.
It has. I'm so excited. When I got the message that you're going to be on, I was super excited. And you know what? The next guest, he's a bit of a good omen too, because the last time I had him on the show, we beat a team wearing blue. He's a bit of a voyeur on Discord. He only joins the chat when his American buddies are on the show. But it's great to have him on the show. It is a contributor to the AI USA podcast. It is Kev Hegarty. Kev, how you doing?
I had a feeling I was going to take a shot at some point in this, but right up front.
Right up front. No messing about.
Me out. I'm super excited to be here. It is a great match to be talking about. I'm excited to be back with Kay. Kay, I haven't talked to you in a long time. So I'm just really excited to get into it and talk some football.
Yeah, and the last time you were on, it was Leicester, right? Blue team.
I did. I was on a run of me and is it Reese was on?
Yes,
and every
yes,
time we
was.
Were on together, we kept winning. So
hold on. So you can't remember people's names, Nina, but you remember when the fuck they were on shows. That's crazy shit, man.
That's. I told you, I'm the fountain of all useless knowledge.
Yeah, well, you have a kindred spirit in me.
Right, guys, you know what? Before we go anywhere, and there's plenty to talk about, and I know you've had a very, very exciting weekend, and I've got to pull you back in a little. We've got some callers as well. But before I go anywhere, I'm trying to get your thoughts on that game. I mean, Kay, I'll come to you first. I know you've got Radar here. You'll have time to digest things and get some numbers out there in terms of player performances. But from last week, where the game was really erratic and really everywhere, and you're like, oh my God. And, you know, how do you feel this week? Clean sheet, 2 goals. It looks so simple. Your thoughts?
Well, I think this was the big test, because the whole thing, like every time we started a new game, even preseason, there was the whole thing of, well, Liverpool have conceded quite a lot since they've won the league. And as a Liverpool fan, you're always going, well, yeah, they've won the league. They're obviously going to take their foot off the accelerator. What is there to excel towards? And, you know, starting the new season, you come in that first game against Leeds, so many goals go in, and you just start wondering a little bit, like maybe, ooh, you know, we need to get some defensive organization going a little bit and stuff like that. And despite the XG models, I understand like Leeds had almost nothing on XG, and, you know, they still managed to get the 3 goals in. But what I loved about the performance this time was it felt so well managed. It just felt like we kept them at arm's length. It felt like the pressure we put on Chelsea was an entirely different pressure to Leeds. Leeds looked like they were reacting by sort of loading up their front line and leaving their defense a little bit open. Chelsea looked like they were just going to keep it so tight and wait for us to make a mistake. And you can wait for a team to make a mistake if they are making defensive mistakes and there is a question about the defensive organization. And basically nothing went wrong. Obviously, we're going to talk about the penalty and that kind of stuff probably later in the show. But man, the way we kept them at arm's length, we just held him on the pitch for so long. I thought that was the pressure that eventually told. And I know it was 2 defensive errors on Chelsea's side, but the way we just kept Chelsea there. We just kept on playing. We never got flustered. And for me, it was just everything was positive today. I was so happy.
Absolutely. And Kev, I'll come to you, you know, from being absolutely batshit crazy last week. And, you know, we were kind of making our own errors. I think Kay's absolutely hit the nail on the head. You know, watching that game, I was just actually quite relaxed throughout.
Yeah, Kay's pretty spot on there. In the beginning, it was a bit, I mean, I think if it was Keem or somebody in the chat during the match was saying, it looks like Chelsea are the away team. Like they just sat in, kept it tight, which I totally understand playing against a team like us. But they've got some superstars on their team now, and it was, I guess, a bit disappointing to see from them, I guess. But yeah, we were patient. No one got frazzled. We knew it was going to be kind of turgid. And then, you know, we kept probing. They made a couple mistakes. It looks like we could have, with a couple better decisions, we could have went up early. But and then, a great ball and a mistake. And then after the red card, we just battered them. And bringing on world-class talent definitely doesn't hinder our chances in any way. So yeah, I was happy with pretty much everybody today, even before the red card. I just kept saying, yeah, we're okay, we'll just wear them down. It's just a patience game, and then patience eventually paid off, and then the floodgate sort of opened on our side.
Absolutely. It was so much fun to watch. And, you know, subscribers who are joining us live, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Keep chatting to us, keep us interactive. You know, if you've got any questions, any thoughts, we'd love to hear from you guys. Also, obviously, I'm not watching post-match stuff. So if you see Frank Lampard having a meltdown, I'd really appreciate it. If you can keep me updated, I'd love that so much. I think we have a caller, so I'm going to go to the first one. It's a familiar voice on the Nina Kowser show. I'm quite happy to have him back on. It is G's on Toast. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how's it going?
Really good. How are you, Nick? I know your name.
Really good. Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah. No, really good. Yeah. What a great game. Yeah. Sorry I couldn't be here for the first game, but I was busy. Yeah. I wanted to talk about Fabinho, really. I thought that he was absolutely brilliant today. I mean, it's not really his normal position, playing in centre back, but he literally stomped all over that Chelsea attack today. His missus tweeted out that he's the man of the match, and I totally agree. I thought personally that the key moment in the game was around, I think it was between the 20th and the 25th minute, when Werner broke through and he was like completely clear through on Alisson, and Fabinho and Van Dijk were quite some distance away, but they managed to make up the ground on him, and Werner tried to turn inside and Fabinho just wiped him out, you know. And if I can have a bit of a Mando style rant, I want to say that, you know, I thought that was a real fucking yes moment. You know, fuck you, Werner. you didn't want to fucking come here. Well, fuck off. So yeah, so Fabinho is my man of the match, and I thought he did really well today. So and you know, and then you talk about fourth choice centre back. Do we need one with Fabinho doing that? Well, I don't know. I mean, that's Klopp's decision, but I think Fabinho was just absolutely fantastic today.
He was absolutely brilliant. And Kay, I'll come to you first, because naturally team lineup, and of course Gomez is out with injury and Matip is out with an injury as well. You see Fabinho, you know, one of our first names that we look for in that midfield, being moved into you know, centre back position. And I think there was a lot of online social media, you know, chit chat about, oh, Fabinho against Werner, you know, like genuine concerns, which you can understand, because like we've all alluded to, this Chelsea team is great. They've bought some great players. And I think Nick has absolutely nailed it. I mean, it was a really, really, it was almost like a baptism of fire. Let's be honest. Werner is a very, very skilled player. And Fabinho did really well, looked really competent, looked like he was part of a good unit. It was almost like him and Virgil van Dijk have played together in that position. But then On the flip side to that, I feel like everything was far more relaxed, like in the second half after the sending off and stuff. But for me, I thought Fabinho taking on that role, he did it so well. And I think it's something that people have been alluded to about Fabinho, that we might have to rely on him as a centre-back if we don't get one.
Yeah, and you can see why those calls are so well-founded. I would still like us to get another centre-back for that position, just because, you know, you want... I think somebody posted something where our fourth centre back regularly plays something like 700 minutes a season, and you know, if we are going to not play Fabinho in his midfield position, I'd like him to get some rest or something like that. But as you say, Nins, wow. The issue I had, and the potential problem with putting Fabinho there, is we play such a high line to compress the field, obviously, and there's such a big gap that goes behind. And you look at why Klopp does that, and it's because we've got, you know, very quick centre backs who can fill in that that distance. We've got a really good goalkeeper who covers really well. But when you put somebody like Fabinho in there, and you're going like, you know, not having maybe the positional awareness of somebody like Matip, who's so used to playing in that position, I'm a tiny bit worried about what's going to happen if the ball is played in behind and Werner is on you. You know, and are you going to, because they're definitely going to attack from that side. They usually don't target Virgil, and you know, they're going to do it with you. He was immense today. I mean, with all the performances on the field, even with Mane, I agree with the Fabinho man of the match calls, because every single time Werner had the ball, with all the hype and stuff, and absolutely warranted hype, he's a really good player. But every single time Werner got the ball, it was a couple of things. Like when Fabinho was near him, he just waited. He just waited for Werner to do something before very calmly relieving him of the ball in the calmest way possible. And when he was a couple of steps behind, he would come in at exactly the right time to take the ball off Werner. I don't think he made one really notable mistake in that lineup, to come in and just play so absolutely seamlessly against an attack that's been so hyped. You know, there's a lot of talk about it, and because they're really good players, Werner looks absolute fire in that role, particularly with his pace. And if you let him get behind, there's every chance he's going to score, let alone create a really good opportunity. So when you see Fabinho do that time and time again in a position, I don't think the Gomez injury happened very long before a kickoff. You know, essentially, I think that's what and then you just come in and do that. Wow. I thought it was just absolutely excellent. I don't think there's more I could say about his performance today. Absolute gargantuan performance.
Absolutely. And Kev, it felt like as well, like they were kind of trying to target that side as well. And, you know, he looked so competent. And we look back at Liverpool, we've kind of experimented with midfielders as centre back. You know, Brendan Rodgers did it with Emre Can. Jurgen Klopp even did it with Gini Wijnaldum and Emre Can against Brighton. You know, we've done it in the past, but, you know, it was a needs must today. And, you know, against, you know, a top team, let's be honest. So, you know, your thoughts on the whole situation. And I am actually with Kay there in terms of I do want another defender, because I'd like to be I'd like to have stock in the right areas for the right positions.
Yeah, totally agree. I wouldn't like to see Fab get overworked, and I mean, to be honest, if we saw a midfielder sitting in the back line, that's who we would target as well. It's just, you don't always have a midfielder that's this talented that goes into, I mean, I have a feeling Fab would be okay up front as well. He seems to be really talented in every position. And obviously defensive midfielder, there isn't much better on the planet. I mean, you can make the argument for a couple, but you know, that's where I want to see him. So even when I saw the team sheet come out, I was like, I mean, we don't have an alternative, so I assumed that would be the case, but you get a little worried because, as Kay said, Werner's excellent. I'm not going to pretend he's not. He had an absolute supernova year last year, and he's been great before that. And it just, that worried me. And that was the target. And there was battles there. And early on, we were talking in the Discord chat, like even Gag said, if he gets, you know, if this happens 9 or 10 times in a match, Werner's going to win one just because he's a talented guy. You know, Fab may not go 10 for 10.
And he did. He did, though.
Yeah, I know.
He did, but we got away with it.
Yeah, and he got in. Kind of weird, fluky, flicked off of Fab a little bit. But, you know, that can happen. And could happen to anybody. But and he got in and we got away with it. And just Fab, he just never looks flustered as well. He's just one of these guys that just glides across the pitch. And everything, he seems like, almost like that messy aura of like, I'm not really doing anything, but I'm doing everything. Like that sort of doesn't look like he's interested, but he just does everything. And he was excellent today. And there's not much more I can add to that. I would like another center back, if only to save his legs a little bit. You know, defensive midfielder is his best position. If he is the fourth choice, you know, for now, fine, but we have two center backs that tend to get, we have one Terminator, and if he gets hurt, we have a bigger problem, but we have two that tend to get hurt and need to be rotated, and we manage them well, but having only three is an issue for a big club, especially one that's going for titles all the time. But I mean, I can't give enough praise to him today. He was fantastic.
I'm itching to get in here because I've never seen a center back press so much. He was literally front foot today the whole time.
And, he did. He was following Werner around. Oh, yeah. Following Havertz around in the beginning. Yeah. Just coming out of line, and Van Dijk was kind of hanging back, where usually he pushes up a little bit more. It was kind of interesting to see.
I think he made some really good points that Hendo was leaving gaps. So when Fab was doing that, in behind him there was no one, and we were getting caught a few times because of him moving out of position. But you know, the six should be really covering that, and he wasn't. But that's a different point of view. The positive part was that Fab literally sat on top of Werner. And maybe it's a nice little blueprint for other teams if they've got someone who can do that as well as Fab to try and shut down Werner, because he was struggling. He was struggling to get away. I mean, I think Werner's got loads of quality, though, so he'll probably change his tact or do something different. He's got so much pace, great touch. It's a shame we didn't get him. I will say that much. You don't want to shit on him too much, but he was Fab's bitch today, and that's a fact. There's no way around it, unfortunately. I thought he was absolutely monstrous, Fabinho today, and he sat in that position, and when it was 11 against 11 as well, not just because they went down to 10 men, but before that.
Yes, that's where he was really impressing me. To be fair,
superb, absolutely superb. So, yeah.
Because after that, I felt like they kind of lost all their attacking kind of nouns. You know, after they went 10 men down, you know, they looked even more conservative. It was before they went 10 men down, you know, went down to 10 men, that 10 men down, down to 10 men. Fucking hell, Nina, pull yourself together, you know. went down to 10 men. That's before that, I thought that's when they were trying to have a little pop at him. I thought he was exceptional. And I don't want to give any spoilers away from Man of the Match. We'll save that till the end. But, you know, Nick has kind of come out there and confirmed that that is his Man of the Match. So I'll throw that into consideration towards the end. Nick, I'll bring you back in, let you have the final say.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, I agree with what everyone else has said, really. I think the situation on the centre-backs is going to be interesting. I thought that in, in pre-season, like this big Billy Kay, Billy Cometio's suddenly appeared after being injured for a long time, and he seems to have jumped ahead of everyone in the youth and reserves in terms of potentially filling that fourth centre-back spot, you know, if it isn't Fabinho. But no one's really seen much of him yet. So, you know, maybe it's a season too early to say that. So, yeah, maybe a fourth centre-back is needed. For the rest of the game, I thought the sending off was correct. I thought Kepa was terrible on the second goal. And the second half was generally pretty comfortable. And to feed into the sort of the whole chat about Thiago, I think the only thing I want to say is I don't know how much blame can go on Thiago for the penalty, because, I mean, he did run into the other guy, but did he really touch him? I'm not sure. But, you know, there you go. Talk about Thiago and that situation.
Yeah, absolutely. We will talk about Thiago in with our next caller. But Nick, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a pleasure having you on again. Consistency, I love it.
No worries. Thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Wonderful, wonderful. Right. So we are going to be joined by our second caller, who should have been our first caller, but this wouldn't be the Nina Kaza show without an epic cock-up. But he's been waiting patiently. He wants to talk about his guy. I mean, I suppose I better introduce him. You've probably heard him on the Newsround podcast with Gags talking about that boy, Thiago. It's an honour to have on. Hakeem, welcome back to the Nina Kaza show.
Oh, it's a pleasure to join you guys on this beautiful saucy day.
Saucy day.
do you guys smell that?
Yeah.
Take a whiff. Take a taste. Oh, the pure sauce. Jeez. Yeah. let me stop waffling. So, I wanted to call in to just say, guys, this is just a... This is just a taste of what we're going to get from Thiago. I mean, obviously he gave the penalty away, so it, you know, it wasn't a flawless performance, and a few of his passes were wayward, but just from his touches, I'm sure everyone could see that this guy is absolutely immense.
I mean, Hakeem, just to come into you there, were you surprised to see him sort of been bought on in the second half, like so quick? And I think... You know, when you do, were you kind of impressed with how he kind of, or did you expect it for him to be so commanding? Because he literally he dominated that midfield. You'd think he's played before for Liverpool.
Well, cheeky plug for AI Pro. As I mentioned on the Newsround podcast, this is a guy that can come in and, well, he probably has come in and all the other lads have seen that he's the best player at the club, technically. You know, passing anything with the ball. So I mentioned that Klopp probably didn't want to throw him into the deep end, but considering that we had to, you know, make a few shifts in the starting lineup because of injuries, it made all the sense in the world that he would come on. And just from his little cameo, you could see that he controls the team. He has this commanding presence, not in the stature of Virgil or Alisson, but just the way he moves the ball and just dictates the tempo. It's absolutely phenomenal. So I wasn't surprised at all. I was kind of expecting it at some point later in the game, but considering Hendo's knock that he picked up, it made all the sense in the world to bring him on at halftime.
Absolutely. And Kay, I'll come to you first on this one. I mean, give me your thoughts on just seeing Thiago. I mean, when I was watching him, I went for, you know, you've got Hakim there talking about sauce. I was watching the guy and I went full Desi. Every time he touched the ball, I kept saying, wow, gee, wow, which translates to wow or wow loosely, I think. Gags and Harindo probably pull me to shreds and saying, you've completely butchered that translation. But literally, I was just in awe of him. You know, so, I mean, give me your thoughts. I mean, how exciting is it to have that kind of play? I think, you know, before we got into the podcast, Gags kind of played a little bit of a snippet of a Sadio Mane interview, kind of saying, well, he's world-class, he's world-renowned. We know what he's all about. And for me, like, when you play that Chelsea team and, you know, you've got the likes of Kante and those kind of players, I think this guy just completely changes the complexion of that midfield for us.
You felt it, didn't you? I mean, when it was announced, we've been waiting so long for the announcement when it came through. I couldn't, there was a little bit of disbelief, right? That this guy is coming on to play that off. I think I was like the both of you. I didn't, I mean, especially because of Klopp and how he has introduced players into the Liverpool team in the past. I was watching the game with my girlfriend and she's like, you know, do you think Thiago will play today? I was like, nah, he's probably sitting on the bench to observe.
Yes.
And I'm sure he needs a couple of sessions to integrate more. I mean, the guy's just gotten off the plane, basically.
We used to clap in terms of, like, I'm going to take my time with you.
I'll take my time. You just sit down and I'll let you know exactly what you want from me. I did think there were a couple of things in that which was so surprising for me to be able to see how the rest of the team reacted to him. But there were lots of memes going around social media since we've gotten Thiago. You know, Thiago makes a five-yard pass and all Liverpool fans will go like, oh my God, did you see that, fam? And it was like that. It was like that. I won't lie. When he was on, he was like, oh my God, he stopped the ball. Did you see it? That was so close. Did you see how he stopped the ball? Oh my God, I'm going to have a baby.
Treat him like a brand new boy. Did you see that? You know, like a newborn. Yeah.
You can just serve me on toast now. He's just made a five-yard pass. But like, what I thought was so exceptional was, I mean, how calm he was while controlling the pace. He would advance the pace of the game while just looking like he normally does, making a very standard diagonal pass, you know, kind of thing, and getting the ball back with the same sort of swagger. He just dink it over the top and totally take out two or three players. What I thought was really interesting, though, is that it looked at times like the rest of the team was wondering where they wanted them, where he wanted them. You sort of, you know, Thiago would be on the ball and pass it.
By the way, he was pointing his fingers around, wasn't he? Like, there. I noticed that.
Yeah. Yeah, and they were like, here, you want me to go here? I'll go. I'll do a little dance. What do you want me to do? You want me to get some pom-poms? And it was so great. Imagine when this guy gets to know our system a bit better. It's going to be overs. Overs Katovas is going to be so great. But yeah, I really enjoyed it. It was the culmination of such a long transfer saga to see him in the flesh, enjoying himself. And even those little snippets of when the Chelsea defender got his red card and how he was jumping off the bench. I was like, this guy is so in control. He really wanted to be here. He's absolutely already feeling like he's part of the team. And I think he moved for the sake of being part of this sort of club movement. You know, he really wants to feel the romance and the family. He's obviously very well acquainted with Anfield and what it means. He sort of already understands what the fans mean to the club and what the club means to the fans. He wants to be part of that. He wants to be part of the club revolution. And it was absolutely just sensational to see him bring it on the field.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is just a little sneak peek of what we have in store. I mean, Kev, I'm going to come to you because, like, you're a guy that always in Discord always has some kind of numbers for me and things. So I'm sure Gags and people have been putting numbers in. So, I mean, what impressed you about him?
Yeah, I mean, so the big one doing the rounds now originally was he completed 75 passes in 45 minutes, which was larger than the entire Chelsea team. So he had more completed passes than anybody on Chelsea, and he only played 45 minutes. But that's not where that stat ends. That's actually the most completed passes of any player in 45 minutes since they started to collect the stats in 03-04.
Oh my God.
So that's our first 45 minutes with this man, and he's already broken a record. So it's impressive. And he just, yeah, it was kind of like fanboying with him. One, he looks great in red, first of all. Let's just get that out of the way. Two.
Do you both have a man crush on him as well? Because everyone has a man crush on him.
Oh, I do. So bad.
I do. And I have for a long time. But I've only ever seen, I've seen him play and been impressed with sort of his technical ability, obviously. And even when he was injured or getting injured at Bayern, like early on, everybody was like, if this guy was fit, he's the best midfielder in the world, you know? And he's that type of aura about him. And for us to sign him, and Gags has been talking about it for days now since the, you know, we sort of got the news and the pods were being released. Like, this is the first, everybody else we've signed have been great or good, and we've made them great, and now they're world class. This guy is coming in the finished article, and that's new for this sort of Klopp era. Even Van Dijk, who we knew was excellent, didn't have the kind of prestige around him that this guy does.
Well, yeah, and we got some shit for the amount we paid for him as well. Oh, you got a defender from Southampton. It did. It happened, people. And right. The and top pundits were doing
he's
it.
He's the best center back in the league and arguably in the world. And but Thiago comes in the finished article. And you can see, as we said, he's thrown in right at the beginning. He's only been training with us a couple of days. And as Kay said, the players on the pitch are like, where do you want me to be? Where do you want me to be, Dad? You know, like that sort of thing. But there's also this mutual respect, because you could see sometimes Thiago was like, ah, I saw you run late. I'm sorry. That kind of thing. Like, and,
yeah, there's no arrogance about it. Like, I'm a bully.
No arrogance at all. Yeah. And that's what I was trying to get at. Like, I've seen him from a technical point of view, but now I can kind of get glimpses of the personality as well, with some of the pre-interview stuff and the media work that they did. But now in the match as well, one, he looks like he's having fun, which everybody on our team usually looks like they're having fun. And there was a couple of moments, and I can't remember if it was like Milner or Mane or Rabah, but somebody down the left, they played like this little 1-2 in between, and it got picked up by Chelsea, and they took away. And Thiago just kind of looked at him, gave him a smile like, "Yeah, we almost got that one." You know what I mean? And he's so much fun to watch, and he's in complete control, and he's better than a lot of midfielders I've ever seen. But I keep going, like, you kind of relate him back to midfielders, you know? So it's like, he has that, I know where everybody is on the pitch, like Xabi Alonso side to him. He also has my spatial awareness is excellent Fabinho side to him. He has that, I'm never going to be flustered Van Dijk side to him. Like, there's just so many things that he has going on for him. And I can't believe this is only 45 minutes. And
you know, the biggest thing he has going for him as well, the timing of playing him here. And I think Rubo's saying at the end.
Yes, I was going to read his comment.
What it shows is, no, 1 minute, let me finish my point. What it shows is that
fuck you.
The fucking fear factor in Liverpool, playing him at that time, the fear factor now with Liverpool is going to be through the roof.
Right.
Absolutely through the roof. Arsenal coming to Anfield next week are shitting themselves. After an absolutely disgusting performance against West Ham, they struggled with West Ham.
Mm-hmm. Right.
What's going to happen to them next week? Motherfuckers, bring it, Arteta and boys, because you're getting fucked.
So as Kay was saying, there was all these memes going around that, you know, Liverpool's going to be, every time there's a 5-yard pass, we're going to be like, oh my God, did you see what he did? Or like, he stopped the ball, that sort of thing. But now he's done this 45 minutes, and I think the rest of the league is going, ah, fuck. Because this is so excellent. I mean, it's against 10 men, but now you have that weapon against 10 men. And you can use that weapon against 11 men as well. It's frightening to think what the formations that Klopp could play with now. And there's weapons all over the park. And if we figure out the center back, you know, third or fourth try center back, we're stacked now. And it's going to be fun.
It does. It provides so much tactical flexibility. And, you know, just going back to Lubo's comment that Gags kind of touched on as well, it actually was the perfect time to play Thiago against 10 men sitting deep, needing him to move the ball and control the tempo. Guys, whilst we're talking about Thiago, I guess we've got to talk about, yeah, he was phenomenal. But, you know, of course, you know, I watched the game on Sky, penalty conceded, they kind of rubbing their hats. Oh, he's a little late there, blah, blah, blah. Talk to me about that, because for me, it was, yeah, there was a teeny weeny bit of contact, but then for me, it looked like, and I'm not being biased, I've seen them given any kind of contact, but for me, he went down after he connected with the ball. Like, it was a slow thing for me. So, I mean, was it a penalty for you? They gave it. I just shrugged my shoulders. I just thought, yeah, whatever. But your thoughts, I mean, will he learn? I mean, is that something that he's going to have to be something that he's going to have to learn and adapt and kind of change. I mean, great confidence booster for Alisson, who saved the penalty. My God, this weekend has been batshit crazy. Alisson even saves the penalty. You know, everything's going up. So, Kev, I'll come to you first on this one. I mean, I thought it was a really, really soft call. I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah.
You're giving I don't give a shit, but it was a soft one.
I think I felt the same as you. It was like, meh, you know, I've seen that given. But I mean, it was, he rushed back to help, you know, and he got there a little late, but I mean, he brushed him. But again, if you're moving at pace, I mean, I don't know. There's, it's complicated, but it's like, I didn't think
they're all being given the share, man.
Yeah. And that's what it is. It's like, meh, it's fine. And then I was kind of worried because for all the things that Allison's great at, he's not great at saving penalties. I mean, he doesn't face a lot either, but. And then he saves this one. One, it was a shit penalty, but he guessed the right way anyway.
But you're talking about a weak penalty. Nothing beats AU's yesterday. Oh my God, it was a Mr. Burns-esque. Yeah. What the fuck? Do you miss leg day? I could not believe that. I pissed myself laughing. That was hilarious, you know?
Yeah, so bad. I mean, they're all going to be given, as Gag said, those kind of soft ones. So I was like, eh, whatever. We'll deal with it. I wasn't worried. I honestly didn't think anybody would save it, but it's fine. But yeah, I mean, it's weak, but I think Lubo put early on, he's like, I'm not convinced of Thiago because he gave away a penalty already, but it's pretty funny.
Yeah. I just want to say something about Cara on Sky. He just had been talking about the man we're talking about, Thiago, and he said, I wouldn't get too carried away with that against 10 men for Thiago.
He goes, maybe he's trying to manage expectations. I don't know. Maybe he's trying to be like unbiased.
There's a level of unbiasedness. Yeah, you see, Neville comes on, and if that was someone in the United,
Neville's appalling. He said,
no, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You got to take sides here, man. This is your Liverpool team. You're Everton fan. You're showing it now, mate. But basically, that was a fantastic performance, no matter what.
Yep.
When people say there were 10 men, with 10 men, there's actually less space for your forwards. It's bullshit when they say there's too much, there's more space. What? Where? We weren't playing. There was no transition. If they were attacking, there'd be more space. They're literally 10 men behind the ball, even deeper. It's harder to get behind them. Yet we looked like we were getting behind them every second of that second half. Mm. It was unbelievable. And it was all with him just being on that pitch, making that space, letting players run off him. Oh, it was just tremendous. It was tremendous. It was absolute nonsense that you can't put that second half down to him. We probably would have struggled to break them down second half without him. That's the difference a player like him makes. We always used to say we can't break these guys down. We can't break a low block down.
What I thought happened was in that first half, I thought Chelsea played 100% at their, you know, whatever they could get done to 100%. And I thought they were looking at us and were a little bit frightened. I thought anything they had, we were dealing with. And every time we just lost the ball or something like that, it would be totally brushed off. Every time we won the ball through a press, and there were a few times when you forced them into mistakes, it was like this expectation that, yes, this is what happens when you play. This is how we play. We are used to this. You are not a special team. And that's why I thought the mistakes were caused by that intimidation. Of you have to be 100% on your game absolutely all the time to play Liverpool. You're not getting anything for free. And then the mistake came when, you know, Sadio's through on goal and the defender's running behind him and is thinking about it. If I give this guy one sniff, we are out. That is less than 100%. We are totally out. And then Thiago comes on. Nah, man. Chelsea were running. And they started losing a bit of stuff positionally as well, just because they sort of didn't want the ball to go into that space where Thiago was. It was intimidation, and then you bring on Thiago. Oh man, come on, it's finished now. that was my feeling on the game, to be honest. I just thought they got too rattled.
Yeah, it was a very sort of Mourinho-esque approach from Frank. It was kind of, we'll defend to the best of our ability here. We'll keep them out of the space, and then we'll let our talented players up front do their thing. And to be honest, if you have Timo Werner and Kai Havertz running at you, that should cause you issues. But I think Havertz might need some time to settle. But they're excellent players. But they just, as Kay said, they were maximizing themselves to keep us out. And we were just calm and waited, and eventually it paid off.
Nin, do you think the psychology of bringing on a Thiago at halftime could break a team as well?
Absolutely, man. And it gives... I'm sorry, like, can you imagine, like, a world-class player comes off the bench? Imagine what it does to the players on the pitch for you, and imagine what it does to the opposition. How do you compete with that? He's going to completely control that midfield. You're not going to, not only are you going to have to deal with, because what happened with Liverpool in the past was, I mean, before Naby, I mean, like, we're seeing good bits of Naby Keita now, you know, certainly when Project Restart happened, where he was dribbling through the middle, and there was a bit of injection in terms of creativity through the middle of the park. But usually we never have it with the likes of Henderson and the likes of Gini Wijnaldum. We don't usually see it. Fabinho has a thunder bastard in him. We know Henderson has now decided to ping a few crosses. That ball to Sadio Mane, by the way, that got Christensen sent off was absolutely gorgeous. Let's be honest. Let's call it what it is. But as a whole, our creativity comes from the wide areas. You're going to have a guy, and you know, Hakim will testify to this. And from what we've been seeing, he's just going to ping balls. Precision. There's going to be a sense of urgency to the attackers. So teams are going to have to deal with another kind of threat. We're not going to be as predictable to play against. I mean, I don't know if Hakim wants to come in and say yay or nay to anything, or if you guys have a comment on that.
Get Hakim.
I think that's... Yeah, let's get Hakim. That's cool.
just a quick side note. In defense of Kara, but not really, I can understand him calling out the you know, the overexcitement of the performance, because probably 10 to 12 of his passes were... you know, just sideways passes where his teammates just wanted to give him a touch of the ball. But if anyone is really paying attention, no one cares about those passes. We're focused on, you know, those little reverse passes, no-look passes that he was playing directly, you know, those vertical passes playing directly to our forwards, you know, into Gini's feet, into Bobby's feet. That's what's important. So we're not...
He doesn't hog the ball as well, does he? He gets it, looks up, and plays something. That's what I noticed with him.
He doesn't hold on to it. He's not trying to look like the best player. You know, a lot of other players in the league, they have their fanboys that say, oh, this player's amazing, that player's amazing, because they try to look like they're doing a lot. We look at Arsenal's performance yesterday. Dani Ceballos was trying too hard to look like he was doing something for them. This is what we're getting in Thiago. He's not a player that's going to try to show you he's the best player. He's just going to play his game, and you'll see it come out, you know? Oh, just to go back as well, you just mentioned something, Nina, I wanted to touch on. What was it? Definitely forgot.
I talk so much shit. You're going to have to be, you know, like, what did I say?
Well, I mean, Hakim, you were bringing up with that, like how Thiago, aside from the offensive side of the game where he knows where everybody is, and he plays these one-time passes, like just spreading the ball, keeping it moving, recycling, and moving forward, and that confuses defenses. But on the other side, you mentioned in the chat how he celebrated a tackle in the middle of the match.
Yes. So, as again, another plug for you guys to become subscribers and listen to our AI Pro podcast. I mentioned on the Newsroom podcast that this isn't a guy that just wants to play those passes. You know, he tracks runners. He's looking for danger. He's making a lot of interceptions. And again, today, we'll see a little clip floating around on Twitter where he's celebrating his tackle that he won close to the left touchline. So this is what we're getting. We're getting an all-around player that's going to... I don't know if I can wax lyrical enough in terms of how he's going to transform this team. This is the elite level. We've performed really well over the last 3 years. This is going to establish Liverpool Football Club, this version of the team, as one of the best ever.
Oof. Well, Hakim, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me on.
It's an absolute pleasure. And guys, if you want to listen to like a really in-depth chit-chat with Hakim and Gags, it is on the News Round podcast. You have to be an AI Pro subscriber. We'll give you details at the end. I'm sure Gags will let you know how you can do that. K, Kev and Kay, I'll let you have your final say on Thiago before we kind of move forward to our next caller. Anything?
Can't wait to see what happens. I'm so excited. It is stupid. I could probably power the entirety of Johannesburg at this point. Just the tiny vibrations coming off of my body. But I think that's probably everybody's. I can't wait to see him start. I can't wait to see how he's used by Klopp and what he does for this team. I can't wait for him to hook up with the front three and just I cannot be excited enough, basically.
Yeah, seconded. There's not much I can say about the guy. He, as I said in the beginning, he's coming in the finished article. He just has to learn our system a little more. And if he does learn our system a little more, just watch out.
Absolutely right. We're going to go on to our next caller. A little bit of intro for him. Listen, yeah, we're going to win the league. It's Del. Welcome to the show.
I think you scared him off.
Yeah, I didn't mean that. You all right? How you doing?
We're good, thank you. Yeah, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. So we just watched the game. Absolutely buzzing, 2-0. The main man, Thiago, was on the pitch. He looked an absolute, as in. The guy just oozes class. Every time he had the ball, the way how he just... pushed the play forward, pushed it back, moved play side to side and all that sort of stuff. It was just absolutely amazing.
Another little insight there. More Del loving. Let Del watch
Del, we just literally covered him.
You know what? I actually said, we're going to have closure on Thiago. Del comes in, he's like, fuck you. I'll have my say. You know, I'm going to mess things up. That's what you guys think. Thank you so much, Del. I'm glad you're enjoying him as well. Guys, you know what?
But I'll tell you guys the one thing as well, yeah? I am looking forward to seeing Diego Jota in this team as well. He'll give us great flexibility in games like, say, today, where Kifumini was a bit abject, to say the least. I know he's up, he won the goal, but he was very quiet today. Player like Diego Jota will... be more penetrative in the box and so on and so forth. So, you know, just a great coup that, you know, we were able to get him as well over the line. It's just onwards and upwards, 3 points, 3 points. You're 6 points ahead of City already. The pressure's on Pep. He has to beat Wolves. But insane that as well. Just my usual mantra, we are going to win the Premier League this season.
You miss listen, yeah. We're going to win the league. You got to say the listen, yeah. Otherwise, it's null and void.
Listen. Listen, yeah. We're going to win the league. We're going to hit the... And we're going to win the league. Hard five fucking words.
Love it, love it, love the confidence. Thank you so much, Del. Right, it's just... I don't think we have any callers. I mean...
We do.
Okay, this is fun. My God. Usually when we win, we don't really have that many callers, which is pretty fucking frequent, let's be honest. Joining us next, I'm excited we'll get another caller done. It is Mike Von Herth. Oh my God, I've not spoken to you in ages. How are you? What a weekend.
Isn't it amazing? Great times, and my today, obviously the performance was tremendous. I thought we were focused, and we took them seriously in the first half, and they're a much better team than they were this time last year, for sure, but I was just in so much control in the first half. But for me, the biggest aha about today's match was Alisson's return to form. I think that was I think when we look back on it, I think we'll see this as a turning point in his last 2 years. Because pretty much since the winter break last year, I found him to be really off the boil. His footwork has been bad. His focus has been bad. He's been making the kinds of mistakes. He's still the best keeper in the world, but he's for the year and a half prior, he was racking up. He was probably double digits a points difference for us between, you know, if Mignolet had been in goal. And today he looked switch on. The save, you know, was not a great penalty, but Jorginho takes that penalty all the time. And so our man was ready for it. And actually the save later on in the second half was superb. So I think I had some lingering concerns about his form, and today I saw something that was really, really encouraging long term. So I think we're gonna start off flying this season. I mean, 2 matches down, but I have a feeling that the momentum and the rhythm is back.
Interesting point of view there, and. Kev, I'll come to you with this one because for me, Alisson, like if I look back from the Champions League, of course, he picks up the injury against Norwich and then Adrian comes in and he plays and, you know, we don't lose a game under him. And then Alisson comes in and he looks pretty decent. I thought we looked a little shaky against when we lost to Watford. And then shortly after that, we went to Project Restart. You know, we kind of disappeared from football. And then obviously Project Restart, you know, Restart happened. Well, we had to finish off the season and, you know, he was making a bit, you know, he looked a bit suspect, but I thought everyone did. I felt like that was a really, really kind of unsettling time for everyone. I didn't feel like Liverpool were their usual selves. And the first game back, obviously against Leeds, he could have been a little better. I think on the show, we kind of criticized the back five in general. You know, it didn't look the best. Robertson probably the best out of the lot. Today, confidence booster, made some good saves, saved a penalty. What I find absolutely fucking bizarre was the fact that this week people were calling him fat. He got body shamed. It's just absolutely crazy. I mean, what do you make of the whole Alisson, you know, overall chit chat?
I mean, if he's fat, I would love to be fat. First off, but yeah, I mean, that's silly. Alisson, we knew when we got him and we saw how good he was, we knew what he was going to do for the team. And it's good to hear from you, Mike. I haven't heard from you in a long time, but he's right in that he was giving us, you know, double digit points, possibly just bringing him in to make the saves and just to be a controlled presence in the back. And he did look shaky after coming back from injury, but it wasn't anything huge. But Nina, as you said, coming back on Project Restart was, everybody was rough. It's weird to think of a goalkeeper as kind of like a rhythm player, because you don't really get into a rhythm in a goal. I mean, I've never played goalkeeper, but I don't feel like you get into a rhythm as a goalkeeper, especially with our team when you have very little to do with your hands kind of thing for a long time. And then you have to be the man in the moment.
And actually, when he came back into Project Restart, he just come back from an injury as well, because he's out for the Atleti game.
Yeah. Oh, true. Yeah, I forgot all about that.
But I did as well. It just came to my head now.
Yeah, so maybe he was just, you know, he's a slow starter from injury, which can happen. You know, the confidence isn't there and that sort of thing. And I mean, last week was chaos. And I think I was talking with Guy after the game, and myself and him both think that old Ali saves one, at least maybe two of those. In that absurd form he was in when he first joined us. But you know, and we got it done last week, and as Mike said, he looked really assured today. And that, you know, Tammy Abraham is no slouch. Like, those shots go in, and he made a good save there in the second half, and obviously the penalty, that'll do nothing but increase his confidence. And I know Lubo put in the chat that he is actually a better penalty saver, has a better save conversion than Mignolet, even though Mignolet is thought of as sort of a penalty stopper. But it's still not one of his best attributes. So it's nothing but great for him to do that. And I think as Mike said, he looked really assured today, and hopefully he continues, and maybe it's, you know, he's fully recovered from injury and now he has two games under his belt. He has some confidence boosting saves and he just goes from strength to strength. But, you know, I got no problem with how he's played today. I got no problem with Alisson whatsoever, and God, no, he's not fat.
Yeah, confirmed. And Kay, I'll come to you. What did you make of his performance today? And, you know, when we kind of, and I think, you know, Mike was absolutely spot on saying, you know what, he looked a little bit suspect in certain games, but he was still by far the best goalkeeper. And that, you know, that kind of speaks volumes in terms of a player. But also, if you kind of look through the league as well, like, I'm going to be honest, like, I don't look at any goalkeeper and think you're great. You know, so he's in a league of his own in that sense. Maybe, you know, Edison for Man City, you can argue, you know, people think he's great, but he's had some stinkers. You know, like there's nobody great.
Brazil's number two.
Yes.
And that and that's it. When other keepers like have really bad bouts of form, it falls to shit. You know, it really gets bad. I mean, it's been interesting having to look at ratings week in, week out. You tend to have to focus. You have to isolate the performance that you've just seen. And that raises some interesting questions in terms of framework. And you know, the Mo Salah one, I think, is the one we're most familiar with in that. What are you comparing his performance to? Because everybody looks at that 40-goal season and goes like, wow, he's not as good as that season. Well, I don't know if anybody's getting there. You know, but he did have that season. So do you keep that as your benchmark or do you develop a new benchmark? You know, and that's, I suppose, the interesting question. And with Alisson, it was all the same thing. We looked at the Leeds one and you go, okay, which other keeper in the league, you know, if they didn't save those shots, would we be going, oh, that's not great. You should have saved a cut, one or two of them or something like that. And even though he got quite low ranking, it was still this. We kept on going back to the fact that we're really rating him against the as Kev says, the old Ali, you know, the one that is going to pull out these gigantic saves. So it's an interesting, it's a really, really interesting debate. And I love that you've brought up, Nins, that, you know, other keepers, I look at the De Gea's, I look at the Kepas, the Pickfords and whatnot of the league, and there's no real comparison. They have their great days, but when it falls down, the wheels totally come off. And if, you know, when Alisson has bad moments, he just falls down to like normal good levels, you know, earthly levels of good keeping kind of thing.
Yeah, it's not a bad patch, is it?
Instead of good to bad. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's, you know, yeah.
You're right. I mean, the only person I can think of, so I am a fan of Hugo Lloris. I think he's a very good keeper. But when he has a bad game, the wheels fall off. Like, he looks below average, or he could be excellent.
There's psychologically not like, affects him, doesn't it?
Yeah. Whereas, as Kay says there, Ali has a bad game and he looks average. It's like, okay, I'll take an average keeper if you're going to have a bad game. But most of the time, he's good to great. So, you know, he's still the best keeper in the league. I don't think there's any arguments there.
So just one final point. His first season with us, I remember doing the math because, you know, kind of always doing a side-by-side comparison to the former occupant of the holder of the shirt, whether it was Karius or whether it was Mignolet. And I think I counted out by the time we hit Boxing Day's first season, he had been, the saves that he had made, at game state, obviously, you know, this is a pretty naive analysis, but saves that he had made at critical points in the season were put him somewhere about plus 12 or 13 in terms of matches that would have been draws that we ended up winning, but he made a critical save late in the game, or matches that we ended up drawing where we salvaged a point because of a save that he made, and most importantly, he didn't cost any points that season. Last season, we didn't need him as much. He was injured for part of it. By the time he was kind of on, in between six, he was, you know, he played well for most of the season. It wasn't that sort of pivotal role. I think this we're going to need him back in the 18-19 form. And so that's why I'm so encouraged by it, because I think the league will obviously be tighter than last year. And so we need him to pull out those points here and there. And that's what I think sets him aside. It's not just his role on the side is not simply neutral. He actually gains his points because he drops shots that no one else does, and at pivotal moments as well. So all to the good. Delighted. This is one of our toughest aways of the season. Kind of feel like whenever we roll into Stamford Bridge, it's like when Man City rolls into Anfield. They can't seem to get the rub of the green. It's been pretty good there the last 5-6 years, and really, really glad to walk away with 3 points today and all the other positives. Good performance. And Fabinho, man oh man, what a player. But anyway, thanks, man.
Absolute pleasure. Well, that was Mike Von Herf, a familiar voice for AI, if you were an old school listener. Thank you so much for joining us. And yeah, I mean, guys, I think with Alisson, last season was so disruptive for so many reasons for him. You know, two injuries, a pandemic, you know, it wasn't as smooth as, you know, the season that Mike's talking about there. And his crucial saves, let's not forget, he, you know, some of those saves won us the Champions League, you know? It is what it is. He's incredible. He's so good. Just so many world-class players in this team. Right, guys, I don't think we have any more callers. It's just myself, Kev and Kay. So what we're going to do is we're going to briefly just talk about things really, really quickly. And guys, Kay, I'll come to you first. I mean, talk to me about the attack. I love this attack. And it reminds me so much of last season where, you know, last season, you know, two would be really, really great and one would just kind of chill out and relax a little. And we're seeing much of that this season as well. Last week, it was all about Mo Salah looking absolutely incredible. You know, Mo Salah's hunger was still there. The desire was still there in that game. But today, Sadio Mane was all about scoring the goals. All three were involved in the first goal, which I thought was exceptional. But, I mean, just talk to me about the front three. I mean, they're deadly.
It's so bizarre that we talk about these guys and they still sort of feel like the most underrated players in the Prem. You know, like we look at Mo and we say, oh, he's not had a good game today. Or, you know, we look at Sadio and he's like, oh, he hasn't really been at the races. And instead not looking at the fact that these guys are literally like double, triple marked because they're so damn dangerous. You know, it's absolutely mesmeric to watch them. So watching Sadio is one of my favorite things. When he's absolutely on his game, he's half playmaker, half absolutely lethal goal scorer, and he just takes our attack to another level. He's untouchable, unplayable on his day. But so is Mo. I mean, last week he looked like he could score any number of goals that he wanted to. He was just absolutely zinging around. When you don't put a number of attackers on him, he's going to absolutely run his defense. The only thing I think that people are a little bit worried about, and that's, you know, maybe something that will develop as we go along. But I suppose the only one that really is attracting some sort of usual comments is Firmino at the moment, and he's in particular his goal scoring extremely involved in our build-up.
Hakim just chimed in here in the chat and said Bobby's turn next week. You know, he likes to make Arsenal his little bitch.
Oh, that would be marvelous, actually. That would be so cool to have them switching and doing things. You could imagine them doing it in the dressing room, like playing rock, paper, scissors and going like, this week is, oh, Bobby's won it this week. Okay, Bobby, you you take him apart this week. Next week is Mo again and we'll start again and see how it happens. That would be absolutely awesome. But yeah, man, it's just Bobby's goal scoring because, like I say, so involved in the build-up play, so involved in the press. But he has had better goal scoring seasons, and what the only thing that sort of it doesn't even bother me. I wouldn't put it to that point, but it's sort of what I some of the stuff I see from Bobby in terms of him being so unselfish in the box. You know, giving up a ball where he's in essentially the same position as Mo or Mane, so they could have this strike, even in some cases, midfielders. I just wish in those particular circumstances, he'd be a little bit more greedy and sort of underline the threat that he carries. He's such a clever footballer. He makes so much space for everybody. Today, there was the one who shot, but he literally rinsed somebody in midfield, got the ball through, had a little 1-2 and then a pass. I think it was Mo had the final shot or something like that. But it was all him. He did all of that. And he doesn't get enough credit for doing that kind of stuff. And the reason for that is we forget that when we think about the game back and, you know, goals and assists and those kinds of things count. And Bobby isn't pushing up those particular statistics. And we kind of lose it in the analysis of the game and the focusing on the highlights. So that's the only thing. But we're absolutely blessed to have this level of attack. Have that every single game coming into where everybody's so scared of making a mistake, applying pressure without actually doing anything. That's scary levels, scary good levels of ability. And we must not forget, we must not take for granted that these three guys play for us and they do this week in, week out, scaring the absolute shit out of our opposition. So yeah, I mean, you can't say enough about them. And I'm looking forward to Bobby doing it next week.
Absolutely, yeah. Don't pit our kings against each other, because I tell you what, all three, they function so beautifully together. Kev, I'm going to come to you. I mean, talk to me just about the front three and, you know, just how incredible they are, how hard they work. And, you know, today was, you know, Sadio Mane's day, you know, gets a player sent off and, you know, left the player with no other option but to kind of rugby tackle him, because he knew that he was in there and he is going to score. But, you know, Sadio Mane today, I mean, what I love is the fact that he's like a small guy, but, you know, powerful with the headers. And then, you know, the counter-pressing goal for the second, just incredible. You know, and, you know, like we said, the selflessness of Bobby Firmino, I think, just makes things tick. And, you know, and his passing and his awareness of his players. But I thought, for me as well, I thought Mo Salah was, you know, he looked lively as well. Doesn't score, but it doesn't mean he's had a bad game. Same with Sadio Mane last week. Didn't score, but I didn't think he had a bad game.
Right. Yeah, and I think Kay summed it up there that we shouldn't take it for granted. It should speak everything that one of our players scored a brace, and we spent, you know, 40 minutes talking about a midfielder playing defense and a midfielder who came on for 45 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
They're excellent, and they must be so exhausting to play against as a defender. You must leave this match, like, destroyed and just go right to bed afterwards, because it is – the movement of these three guys, and it's not just that. So Bobby isn't the fastest player in the front three, but his intelligence in the movement drags players out of position. But then you got Mo, who's just lightning, and Mane, who's lightning, and both of them can change direction so fast that they just tie defenders up in knots and find the spaces they need. And not only that, but they play defense as well. So they're constantly pressing you, which gets him his second goal. And Mane's absurd that he's an aerial threat, but he is. He's a little guy. He's shorter than me, and I can't do what he does. But even if it was put right on my head, they're just excellent, and this entire team is excellent. And they do this, as you guys said, week in and week out, and the consistency they can do it over multiple seasons now is remarkable. And I do have a little bit of concerns about Bobby at times. I thought he had a good game today. I thought his move was good. Sometimes he gets caught in two minds. Like, there was that one that Mo flashed across the goal. And I don't think if that was Mane in the box, he's running right for the back post and he may get there. And I think Bobby couldn't decide whether to come back to the penalty spot or make that run. And it kind of just flashed in front of everybody. But,
I think he made up for it by doing the assist. You know, I think a goal involvement, that'll help Bobby a lot.
Gads loves it when the front three are all involved in a goal. It's like a trigger response.
The hockey assist for Mo, the assist for Bobby, and the goal for Sadio. And that's what wins the game. That literally wins the game. You know, 1-0 would be enough here. And that was, you cut them up and it's your front three doing it. I don't think there's anything more perfect. You know,
I don't think they'll all benefit from it.
They'll all benefit from it.
Yeah. I generally have a little bit of a concern about Bobby, but he does all the things. And, you know, and he, even when he's not having a quote unquote bad game, he works so hard and he still destroys defenses just by his work rate, even if it's not his, you know, skill on the ball, if he's having an off day or whatever. And these guys are going to kill you if you make a mistake. And to have a defense be perfect every game against these guys, you're just not going to do it. And, you know, and that's why we win games and they score tons of goals, and long may it continue, especially against Arsenal.
Absolutely. You know what? You guys, you're keeping me busy. You know, I'm really hungry, but you're like, no, keeping me on a liquid diet. I'm drinking green tea. We've got another caller joining me on this podcast again, familiar voice, co-host of the Desi podcast, the king of gifts. It's Harinder Singh, but we call him Bhaji. Welcome to the show.
Bhaji, hello.
How are you?
I'm very happy. I'm very happy indeed, because, well, my neighbours will be crying for the rest of the week, if not the rest of the month, if not the rest of the year. I won't really care. Every time I'll go for a walk around here, I just take the piss out of them like I normally do. But leaving my nasty neighbors or noisy, lots of noisy neighbors aside for a second, I have a question for the panel. What do you think the difference was today in comparison to previous outings at Stamford Bridge? So let's take the last three seasons or so. In the last three seasons of going to the away match, irrespective of which competition we play them in, Chelsea always make chances, and they always make chances down the wings and the channels, and they do it by opening up from midfield in regards to our midfielders, then coming down the sides and then getting balls in and or going through the middle. And they've been doing it season in, season out, match in, match out against our defence and our midfield and walking through them at times and creating guilt chances, brilliant chances, and they need to take them. If you remember the one against where De Sturridge got the equaliser in the second half after coming off,
mm-hmm.
Chelsea were fantastic in that game against us. Even in the 2-1 last season where we cruised the first half, second half they came out with a bit between their teeth and it could have been a completely different scoreline. In the FA Cup, in the kind of match whereby we had a lion's share of possession in the ball and then they crucified us and it was always a blue. Mr. Barkley, Ross Barkley scoring a goal. But today, let's leave it to when they were 11 against 11, first half. They had one. And even that was a ricochet off Fab, which fell nicely for Timo. But other than that, nothing. So what do you think the change is? Because similar kind of team, not much, that hasn't been a change in personnel, really, in defence. If anything, it was a negating element in respect to Fabinho, who's not a centre-back, going backwards. So what did the panel think was the difference today? Because it is a completely different team in that sense. But Pulisic hasn't always been there to do this for them. Actually, if I'm right, especially in the last one, he missed it. Similar to this one, he missed it.
Yeah, if people are thinking, why did Harinder just randomly say Pulisic? Gags is in the chat saying, Pulisic, they miss him. He's fucking ace. He troubled us.
He came on him. That's how they scored their goals in the last game. It was all him. He was just.
No, but that was. I'm talking about the away. I'm talking about Stamford Bridge.
Stamford Bridge. Wasn't it a similar game, though? It was very cagey and it was just set piece goals last time. That's all it was. We scored a free kick and off a free kick.
Well, scored like that. But if you remember the second half, they were like on us like a rush. It couldn't, we contained it to be 2-1, but they were very, very good second half. Season before that, they scored first, bastards, and nothing really went our way until Sturridge came off and scored a worldie.
Roughly what time, when did we play them last year at Stamford Bridge? Or can anyone remember the month?
It was Sarri, wasn't it? They did play good football, man, under Sarri. They had their times. They had they were cutting us open with Willian as well, making runs in behind every 2 seconds. It was different. And plus, didn't we have Adrian in goal? Was it Adrian in goal for that one?
Yep.
So we were probably a little bit, we were a bit jittery with him in goal. Always,
It's Frank.
Pardon?
That's the difference.
It's Frank last season.
Yeah, it's Frank. Frank's the difference. Yeah. Frank's the difference. It's Sarri. They still play good football with Sarri, man. They still play good football.
Yeah, Sarri was in charge when Sturridge scored the goal. Last season, it was Frank Lampard. And this season, it's Frank Lampard.
It was all Frank Lampard last year.
Yeah. I mean, actually, Kev, I'm going to come to you with this one because what I kind of noticed last season was I remember Frank Lampard being held up as this revolutionary, I'm going to give the youngsters a lot of chances. And his kids, to be fair, started off really bright. There was a lot of hunger about them, a lot of desire. It was almost like their chance to shine. And, I mean, talk to me about what happened in this game because I think Harinder's right. They didn't create an awful lot. Every time they tried to create something, Fabinho was there. They tried to kind of attack that side. Fabinho was there to kind of snuff it out. Do you think it could be a nice little balance of between us looking really settled, like our team pretty much picks itself, and maybe them having a few new players who are kind of adapting and learning something?
Yeah, I think it's probably, that what you're talking about and to back to Podgy's question as well, it's probably a mix of a lot of things. So it's new players coming in and they have to integrate because they paid a bunch of money for them. So the pressure's high there. So the kids are getting knocked back down again. I think Frank is a bit overrated as a manager. I wasn't impressed with his Derby team. he did a lot for Chelsea as a club to play those kids and figure out actually how good they are. So I'll give him that, because some of them are Premier League caliber and they should, you know, stay there or go somewhere else. So it's that, it's the new players. It's Frank's trying to figure out his best team and how to play them correctly and not having years of experience. It's also, there's no fans. I mean, it's away at Stamford Bridge, but still, it's that historically, at least since Roman has come in, is a bigger game for us. You know, especially when Marino was there. And I think it's just a lot. And today, I don't think we give a shit who we play anymore. We're going to beat everybody. And that's the mentality we have going in. Our, as you said, our 11, 12, 13 sort of is settled, with, you know, with new additions being worked in as we go. And we're the champions, and who cares who they put out, because we're going to beat you anyway. In the past, it's kind of, we needed a moment of brilliance, I think, or, you know, from a set piece or, you know, as you said, the Sturridge worldy kind of thing. And I don't think we need that anymore. We know we can wear down. And I think it goes to the mentality monsters thing, and it goes to us being champions and having this aura about us now. I think Chelsea, for all their talent, and they are talented, have work to do, and I'm not sure Frank is the guy to do it. But yeah, I think it's different now. We kind of have the edge, and we've won a bunch in a row against them, and a
spot
bunch of
on,
other teams.
So I maintain that whilst Lampard's there, they're not going to be a threat to Liverpool Football Club. They can bring Havertz in, they can bring Werner in, they can bring a keeper in. They will not be a threat to Liverpool Football Club. Or everybody was losing their shit when they were signing players and we were signing no one. We were still better than them without signing anybody.
Yeah,
I'm telling you that
they'll
now.
They'll win games. They'll win games. I don't think they'll beat us.
Yeah, so. They were lucky to beat Brighton. Brighton were so far superior at times in that game.
Yep. Defensively, Chelsea looked awful again.
I'm so impressed with Brighton, by the way. Yep. I just think they really need to... They really need to have a look at it. I think he's stacked with privilege, this lad, Lampard. And at the end of the day, couldn't beat a Liverpool team with Fab in defence. And they got their Werner and stuff like that.
I think Potter's more experienced than Frank. I think
absolutely
he's
better manager than Frank, mate.
We'll talk about Frank in a hot minute about his rants. That'll be the final thing. I'm going to come to you, Kay, now. Kay, talk to me, because I think the lads have made some really, really good points. I think they're all fair shouts. I feel like we're a lot more mature and a lot more sensible in how we approach a game. We have this ability to kind of kill out a game. Klopp does have players to kind of kill out the game as well, like bringing on like the Milners and like changing it up in that capacity. I mean, what do you think is the difference to us? I think Gags has hit the nail on the head as well. Like, you know, Frank Lampard's team is a psychological edge. Like, they are not going to scare us. And Kev just said, Liverpool are champions. I think that just changes your attitude and demeanour.
I think for me, Frank was intimidated. I thought he was intimidated before the game even started. I watched the Brighton game and I couldn't really believe what I was seeing, because you have this Chelsea team with all these riches, everything at his disposal, and he plays essentially a counter-attacking side. Why would he do that? Why would he set up against Brighton to do that? And the reason was because he's going to play us the next week, and he's sorting his team out for that game. He is making us the sole focus of all his preparations for all of preseason and all of the first game. He's built us up to such an extent that when that defender sees Mane running in front of him, get the ball, he goes, I'm going to pull the guy down instead of letting him have a shot, because that is a certain goal. You know, when Kepa sees Sadio Mane bearing down on him, he freaks out, because the specter of Liverpool, I think, has been built up in these players' heads. I don't know if Frank is managing that situation very well, frankly. but he just looks like he was too intimidated with us with that whole Klopp spat nonsense that he's got. I think the press has bought into this this facade of Frank as this big returning player who knows what he's doing, who commands the respect, the pull of Frank Lampard in the transfer market. All that's been written, and I don't think they really feel that. I don't think Frank really feels that in Chelsea. And when you don't have the necessaries to build to fill that gap, what you have to fill it up with is bravado. you know, and you can talk all you want, but you can sense that underlying nervousness. And when Liverpool are not making mistakes, when they're coming at you constantly, when they're not getting frustrated, when there's a sense about them that they know they're going to score at some point, I think that over the course of the game, we just weighed on them too much. And I think that's the big thing. They had all these players at their disposal. I mean, if you look at it this way, do you think like Conte with that side would set up in the same way? I just can't see it. Do you think Sarri would do it? Do you think Mourinho would do it? You know, not to the same degree. They would be more effectual because they are better managers than Frank Lampard. Mm-hmm. I think he knows there's a bit of deficiency there, and he's just bigged up too much in the press, and there's not enough necessary. He doesn't have the necessaries to fill that gap. I think that was the biggest factor today in how Chelsea approached the game.
Yeah, I think Klopp's, I think you're talking about Lampard. We might as well just carry on. I think he's really got into his head. You know, that rant, like, did you see him at the beginning of the game? Like, he looked so sheepish and embarrassed to embrace Klopp. Klopp was looking at him like, you little shit. You know, like, Klopp's not going to say anything, but Klopp just looked at him like, you little dick. You know?
Let's be fair. Lampard before the game, like Klopp in his interview, said, I have the utmost amount of respect for Jurgen Klopp. This has been blown over. What happens in the game, like Klopp said, it happens in the game, you get blown over. There was nothing. They were actually having a laugh about it when they bumped fists beforehand. Because they would have met before in the if they have to go to the referee's room before the game starts. So we see that on the inside Anfield stuff. So that would have been happening at Stamford Bridge as well. That honestly, it just gets blown over with the stuff afterwards. We all rant about it, but he's actually said that on TV. That I respect you. This is just yesterday or the day before. I respect Jurgen Klopp. Nobody.
Well, he apologised straight after his rant at Anfield because he looked so stupid.
I know, but I think he was still. He's a sportsman. Remember, he's not just a manager, but he's been a very successful sportsman. And I hate Lampard. I'm not making excuses. I'm just trying to be fair. But he was in the heat of the moment. And afterwards, he hugged Mane as well. He was still in the heat of the moment when the interview happens. It's literally like right after the game.
But what's he said today then?
Today he was just talking about the game today. So he's literally said nothing about Klopp today, and he won't, because Klopp didn't do anything. In fact, yeah. I don't know if you all read the story where the red card happened. The whole Liverpool players behind them jumped up and started cheering. Klopp turned around and said, "Shut up. That's not how we do things."
Right?
So I think Lampard would have appreciated that. Because again, that would have fueled fire and Lampard would have got hot again. And Klopp's like, I don't want that shit. I don't need this. I'm going to win the league anyway. I don't want to fucking have people hating me or my team acting like dickheads. I'm going to win this league like we do it all the time by being good guys. We don't need the Mourinho be a dick and win the league. We're just too good. We're going to win the league by being amazing and being gentlemanly. And literally introducing a fucking cricket, a gentlemanly conduct thing into football clubs. But the only reason I said that is just let's just be fair. He does say he loves Klopp. How can you not? You know, he respects Klopp. How can you not? You know, he's achieved everything now in football as a club manager. There's nothing else left apart from doing it all again, you know? So, yeah. Lampard's not stupid. Lampard's emotional, and he's a bad manager at football, but he's not stupid.
I think the pressure's on Lampard now, and that's the problem.
He's bought.
Money! Oh my God!
Last season, it was like, oh, you know what? He didn't have a transfer window. They were banned. Yeah, he's playing kids. You know, he's revolutionised football. Look at these kids flourishing under him. You know, he's a bit of a darling. And I think Hakim said it as well, and I think he put in an article in there as well. The man lives off privilege. He literally has no idea how privileged he is.
Yeah, and I think as you said, last season he was a bit of a darling, which, you know, credit to him, the kids played well, and he did do pretty well with what he had. And I mean, that's not to say he didn't have players, because he did, sitting behind some of these kids. But now they've spent a bomb, and Roman is interested again. So now he's sitting on the throne with the sword over his head, because at any moment he could be axed or somebody else, because that's what Roman is used to doing. And it may get to him a little. So, yeah, we'll see. But again, I think Frank, with these players not knowing his best 11, not knowing the best system, and we kind of coming in going, we can beat anybody in the league, it's a different ballgame now.
Before we close off, No, okay. Harinder, thank you so much for your call.
No problems. Thank you very much, folks. Same time next week or so, I think.
Monday night.
Monday
night.
It's the Arsenal. We're playing
the title favourites, people, right?
Listen, you know what? Completely non Chelsea related question. Why has Mikel Arteta got acrylic hair? He looks like
a Lego man, doesn't he?
I was gonna say that he looks a bit like a Lego man.
Oh, he looks like a Ken doll. He's really, really like striking. So he's so like, yeah, his hair, so it doesn't move.
What do you mean we're sprayed so rude? On? Why are we so rude? I can appreciate people's haircuts given the fact that I've never had one for the last 40 something years or so, but there's just something wrong with his hair. There is.
You must have got some of that. Week.
There you go.
Maybe he uses that canister stuff on Police Academy. You know, that stiffens the armpits. Proctor and Harris. Remember when they like spray something under his armpits? And it just. I don't know what it's called. Reference? Yeah, I don't know what. Maybe he uses something like that. I don't know. I need that hairspray. Anyway, we have gone on a mad tangent and it's Harinder who fucking starts it. It has nothing to do with me. Guys, I mean, thank you so much, Harinder. A massive thank you to all our callers. You know what? I've got to get man of the match from you guys. So, Jason Toss came in there, said Fabinho's his man of the match. I think I also saw a really positive comment there from Mike Monherf. He said, last week we looked kind of threadbare and like this weekend we look competent in most of our positions, which is so strange. What kind of weekend have we had? So, guys, man of the match shouts, who and why? And Kay, I'll come to you first. I think there's two players that people will shout for.
Yeah. I think for me, I've got to give it to Fabinho. He's just, you know, to come into the lineup and do what he's done, to look after Werner the way that he did, to just fit in so seamlessly and have such a commanding performance, allowing the team to do what they do, to just hike up the pressure on Chelsea continuously by denying chances that way. And as much as I'm looking around and there are a couple of other man of the match contenders, for me, it's just very difficult to look past Fabinho.
That absolutely speaks volumes, considering, you know, what kind of game Sadio Mane had as well today. So, you know, hats off to Fabinho to play in a position that isn't naturally his against an attacker that is very, very dangerous and ruthless. And what about yourself, Kev?
I mean, we had a striker who scored a brace. We had a player come on and break a record in 5 minutes, and I'm going to give it to a different player. And I'm also going to agree that it's Fabinho today. He got thrown sort of out of position, and he was excellent. And yeah, there's not much more I can say about him. The guy's great.
Yeah, I think lots of people are agreeing to this. Go on.
I'm giving it to Thiago. Don't care. I'm giving it to Thiago because I'm going to lose anyway. Fabinho's getting it. But I'm just going to come and give it to Thiago because I've got it. There's nobody else we're loving at the moment. This guy is the game changer. The evolution of Liverpool begins now. And I hope everybody's ready for it because we're in for a fucking ride and a half this year, man.
You can't get mad at that shout as well. Can't get mad at Alisson either. This is just so crazy, right? There's a few players that you could actually literally give it to. I am myself going to give it to Fabinho for all the reasons that the lads have mentioned. But if you want to give it to Thiago, if you want to give it to Sadio Mane, if you want to give it to Alisson, I'm absolutely fine with it. But guys, do let us know. Before I go, I'm going to get some plugs. Kev, anything you'd like to plug?
Nope.
What about your Twitter?
Yeah, Twitter at Kev Hegarty, although I've been taking a bit of a break. I keep coming back on to remind him. I'm in and out on there. You know, stay locked into AI. I'm sure there'll be a USA podcast soon as I can get Justin and Joey and Armando on the phone. So yeah, stay tuned.
Always worth listening to the AI USA podcast. It's incredible. And give Kev a follow. And Kay, you're a busy guy. I'm really looking forward to the player ratings. I expect, you know, plus tens all around, you know, no pressure. Tell people more about the work that you're doing and where can they find you on Twitter?
Yeah, just so if you are so inclined, have a listen to my pod, Rate Don't Hate. I host it, and my panel is usually Guy and Tadiwa. We have absolute fun every week just looking at the ratings. We compare a bunch of media ratings to AS subscriber ratings, and obviously my panel have a rate as well. And it's really cool because what we do is we look at different frameworks of how people are rating. You know, this, you can do it statistically, you can do it with the eye test, you can do it on big moments. You can do it on how wonderful each player's hair is and so on and so forth. And everything is valid. So we just love to have a talk, love to open the discussion along all those things and just have a really good laugh along the way. It's a really fun pod. I'm really happy to be doing it. And yeah, so do give us a listen. On Twitter, my handle is TheKyln. So it's TheKYLN. You can find me there, and obviously all my plugs for the Rate Don't Hate podcast are on there too.
Yes, absolutely. Give both these guys a follow. Check out Rate Don't Hate. It's an excellent podcast. Fair down the line. I love the ratings. And Gags, where can people subscribe to AI Pro and stuff? Go on, you're good at Puzzle Gig.
So first and foremost, if you love Tiago like I do and everybody else does here and every Liverpool fan does, go and check out the Maestro collection on AnfieldIndex.shop. It's on the front page. AI Pro 10 is a 10% discount. Go and buy whatever you want. There's loads of stuff there. And if you want to join AI Pro, 7-day free trial, AnfieldIndex.com/join. At the end of the day, all of the content, the magnificent content on the transfers have been there. There'll be a couple of off the walls out. I think there's one out for the Thiago Thursday one that we did. I think there will be some Wolves and Portuguese expert ones coming out later in the week, maybe Tuesday, Wednesday, after we've done some pro stuff. There'll be a taster, and Eddie will be putting all the plugs on there as well. Make sure you listen to them. That's the type of shit we do, and we're getting so much praise for that content right now. It's been unbelievable. We've all worked really hard on there. Nina had the Bundesliga experts on, Chris and Manu Veth. And it's just been a weekend where it's been a joy. It's been a joy. So if you can support us further by going in and subscribing, please do. There's always a bigger message than football, though. And if you can, stay safe. Please still do, because that horrible thing is still out there. And it's, you know, it's causing a lot of trouble close to home as well. So make sure you stay safe. Wear a mask all the time. Okay? Yeah.
Absolutely. I think that's a really fitting way to end the podcast, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Take care, stay safe, wear a mask, be respectful. Till next time, up the Reds.
Podcast Network.